You're listening to Profiles in France Formation, the podcast where we hear from inspiring people who have pursued their dream of moving to France. We learn about why they moved, how they overcame the challenges they faced, and what they love and hate about living in France. I hope that hearing their stories can help you to pursue your dreams and maybe your very own France Formation. I'm your host, Allison Grant Luness, and I'm here to tell you, my guests followed their dreams, and you can follow yours too. It starts today. Welcome to episode 55 of Profiles in France Formation. I'm your host, Allison Grant Luness, and today's guest is Kylie Lang, creators of the Life in Rural France website. Kylie is an English copywriter who moved from the UK to settle in the Charente area, where she runs her business and website from home and enjoys local activities like line dancing. Kylie is also launching the Life in Rural France podcast shortly, where I will be a featured guest in one of the first episodes. Welcome, Kylie.
Welcome, Kylie. I'm so happy to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here. I love chatting to people on podcasts, so I know this is going to be a lot of fun.
It is. All right. So why don't we start with, tell me about how did you come to France? Where did you decide to live? And at what stage of your life were you when you decided to move here? What were you envisioning for your future life in France to be like?
Okay, so I should probably start off by saying, I think I've always been a gypsy at heart. Even when I was a little girl, I used to be that little girl who played with her dolls, but instead of playing with them, I was always moving house. So we'd usually moved house three times by the time it came to lunchtime. So I think that kind of sets the scene for what was to come, because I've lived on three different continents. So obviously I've lived in Europe because I'm British. I moved to Australia and I spent 10 years in Australia, and I also had 2 years in the US as well, as my daughter was a figure skater and she was training over there. So to say I've moved around a bit would be an understatement, but I think you hit a certain period of your life, and I won't hide it, I'm 51 now, and you want something different. There is only so long you can keep up the mad traveling that I certainly enjoyed, and the lifestyle I enjoyed, going all over the place, and my job allowed me to speak at different events and that type of thing. But you get to a point in life where you think, actually, I want a slower pace of life. I want something else. And I've always loved the country. When we were kids, my family never went abroad for our holidays. We always stayed in the UK, and we went to a beautiful place called Shropshire, and we went to this same farm for 11 years. And I think that's where I fell in love with the countryside. My brother and I would be out all day, every day on the tractors with the farmers. Like, we'd be mucking out. We'd be, just everything you could imagine we did, because as city kids, we didn't have that where we lived normally. So I've been married twice. And so with my second husband, Richard, we decided that we didn't want to be in the UK. This is where I met him. By this time, I'd moved back from America and I was living in the UK. And in all honesty, I wasn't happy. I didn't like the weather. The weather used to just, as you know, it rains a lot in the UK, a lot. And having lived in places like California and Melbourne, where you got really great summers, that wasn't doing it for me. So we decided, don't ask me why. I actually have no idea why we picked France. This was more my husband's idea than mine. He said, why don't we go and live in the Pyrenees? And I'm just thinking, Pyrenees, snow, cold. Not sure about that one. So we went for a few days on holiday and quickly decided that the Pyrenees probably wasn't for us. And we thought, actually, maybe the Dordogne would work for us. So we dutifully, did our reconnaissance mission and went to the Dordogne and traveled around. And by mistake, we took the wrong turning and ended up in the Charente. And I just fell in love with it. There were just fields and fields and fields of sunflowers and rolling hills and trees and animals and basically not really any sight of a house. It was everything I'd always imagined. And so we went to see five different houses in the Charente, and the house that we ended up picking was actually what I called a comparison property. The other four were properties I thought would probably be the ones that we would go for. And hey ho, we may as well tack this one on the end because it looked kind of cute. But I didn't realize the potential of this property till we walked in. And suffice it to say, the one that we thought was just going to be a little comparison property is the one I fell in love with the minute I walked in the door. And within 24 hours, we'd had an offer put in, an offer accepted, and yeah, That was it. We were moving lock, stock and barrel to France. So to say we put thought into it is really not the case at all. We literally flew by the seat of our pants, fell in love with the property and went, what the hell? Why does it matter? Let's just do it. What can possibly go wrong? If it goes wrong, we move back to the UK. And that was how we did it.
Wow, that's really fast.
It was. And I tend to make a lot of decisions like that. I'm a gut instinct girl. So for me, procrastination never comes into it. If I'm going to do something, I usually feel it somewhere inside. It's that gut instinct that a lot of women, I think, have. It's intuition. You know generally if something's wrong. And the other way of looking at this, if there's too many obstacles put in your way, I always think that's the universe telling me not to do this. Do not go against this. Listen to this. But everything was so easy from that perspective. Right. Yes, it definitely got harder as things went on. But the actual process of finding the area, finding the property, putting in the offer, getting accepted, it all just happened. And so it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah. So once you put in that offer and had it accepted within one day, what was the process like of actually moving here? And how long was it? Because as opposed to, for example, the UK or the US, house purchases can sometimes drag out a little bit.
Yeah.
So I like to give people a realistic idea of what's the process like between putting in that offer, signing the compromis de vente, and then actually receiving the keys and being able to move into your new home in France.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the last property I'd bought was in Australia. And in Australia, you can buy a property and get the keys within 6 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks. Like, it is fast. So over here, we put the offer in on the 1st of July and we finally got the keys to the property on the 10th of October. So that gives you some idea as to just how long that process took. And I couldn't understand really, in all honesty, why it was taking so long. But it is just French system, bureaucracy, admin, etc. It really isn't a fast process, no matter how ready you were. And we were cash buyers. There was no mortgage involved. Nothing. We literally had the money. We were ready to go. There was nothing standing in our way at all. But the process still took over 3 months.
Yeah, that's not surprising. There are a lot of delays that can happen. And sometimes it can drag out even longer than that. So when you first began the process of moving, it was before Brexit. So you didn't have to do all the visa shenanigans. But what were some of the things that you really enjoyed about the process? And what were some of the challenges that you started facing as the move became more and more of a reality?
So I think one of the things I loved about moving over here was we were lucky to have a property that had renovation potential. So we moved into a 4-bedroom house that had been completely renovated by an English builder. Very coolly done, lots of quirky little features, and I absolutely loved it. And it was ready to move into. But it also had 3 barns attached to it. So we had that great opportunity to basically turn barns that were rat ridden. And in one case, it was a big hangar with no front on it. We had the opportunity to turn those into something else. And where I'm sitting right now is the old hangar. So it was this big frontage with nothing but a big iron sort of steel thing in the middle of it with really high ceilings. And immediately that I saw it, I realized that if we put a floor in there, that would be my office, and I could see right out over the French countryside. Not only that, we have bifold doors going all the way across. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 bifold doors. So it's beautifully open. You feel like you're outside. And I think for me, that was the fun part. I'd always fancied doing a barn conversion. And now I didn't have just one. I had 3 that I could convert. And in all honesty, we've only converted 2. We're still in the middle of converting the 3rd one, but we'll get there. So that was definitely part of the allure, the fun. But with that also came frustration, because renovating over here, doing any type of DIY, is not like doing DIY anywhere else. You cannot readily get hold of supplies. Tradesmen aren't banging down your doors to do things for you. They are incredibly unreliable. They have a c'est la vie attitude where, oh, I might be there on Monday, but then I might not be there for 4 weeks. So you kind of have to get used to all of the things that come with trying to renovate any type of property in France. And it is definitely a frustration. Other frustrations that I found were I had to slow myself down. So I was so used to just being able to go onto Amazon and have something delivered within, you know, book my space and it would be delivered an hour later. No, that doesn't happen, especially not in the countryside in rural France. You also have to navigate when the post office is going to be open. And for my local post office, it's more a case of not how when it is it open, but how often it's going to be closed, because it seems to change its opening hours every single week. So you have to sort of navigate that. The 2-hour lunches, which French people tend to stick to. You know, if you suddenly think, ooh, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to grab a bite to eat and I'm going to go to the bank. You can't do that over here because the bank will be closed. So I've come to embrace this. I've come to love this. I have come to really enjoy that slower pace of life. But if you've come from a city and if you've come from running your own business where, you know, you're used to fast internet, you're used to good service, you're used to everything happening yesterday, then you need to reevaluate your thinking ever so slightly, because that really isn't what happens over in rural France. But it's also part of its charm. I used to be that person who would stand in the shopping market, in the supermarket. I'd be stood there in line, tapping my foot impatiently, looking at my watch, thinking, do they have to have a conversation going on this long? Does she have to write a check to pay for her groceries? Now, I sort of kind of look at them quite lovingly and think, isn't it nice that they can maintain this way of life where there is time to have a chat with the person on the checkout. There is time to write a check instead of swiping everything by credit card. So I think you have to be prepared for a much slower pace of life. That's one of the biggest things I struggled with originally.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's interesting because on the one hand, I think most people who want to come to France, who have the dream of moving to France, one of the things that we romanticize and idealize is the idea of there's a much better work-life balance. People don't work 80-hour weeks.
Absolutely.
People have the weekends, they have Sundays off. They're not working outside of work hours. It's illegal to work outside of work hours, but then at the same time, not necessarily willing to accept everything that comes along with that is that sometimes you have to
exactly.
wait for stuff.
I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's the grass is always greener, but we have this, we kind of have rose-tinted glasses. So we have this illusion of what it's going to be like to live the rural life. And I think people think they're going to be sipping aperitifs and, you know, trotting off and buying baguettes every morning. And, you know, life is just going to be amazing. But it, and it is, in all honesty, I would not, somebody asked me the question the other day, would you ever move back to the UK? No, not under any circumstances. I adore my life here. But you do have to set your expectations. You have to be ready for the fact that you've signed up for a slower pace of life and things won't happen at the speed you are used to, especially your internet. Now, we now have fiber, but bearing in mind I run an online business and have done for many, many years, my internet speed often used to be dial-up speed. It was, and you could never tell. One minute you'd be going at warp speed, the next minute it'd be back down at dial-up. So that was probably one of the biggest stresses for me was the lack of continuity within the Wi-Fi. But now we've got fiber and I've never looked back. So France is definitely doing quite well on that side of things. All the little villages around us now have fiber. It's been a plan that's been going on since the beginning of the year, which has been fantastic. But there's still quite a few villages in rural areas that don't have it. So these are just things you've got to be prepared for, things you've got to do your research on, which if I hadn't been quite as gung-ho, maybe I would have done a little bit more research on the Wi-Fi side. But hey-ho, I fell in love with the house. And so nothing else mattered at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of those things. If like you had done more research into it, it might have stopped you.
Probably would have. Or maybe it wouldn't have stopped me, because when I've made my mind up to do something, I generally do it. But I think it would have been more of a concern of my husband, because he would have been worried about the amount of smoke coming out of my ears every time the internet didn't work. So I think he would be more worried about his quality of life and it being affected by me not having internet than anything else. So because he knows, obviously, you know, it's how I earn a living. But yeah, that has definitely got better.
Yeah, for sure. So what were some of your favorite things when you first arrived, and how did you adjust to the slower pace and lifestyle of living in rural France?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there was a lot of things I loved about being here in France. And certainly for the first 6 months, I think we just immersed ourselves in attending everything we possibly could. We went to our local events at the Salle de Fête, and I loved doing this because it gave me an opportunity to mix with French people. And by the way, my French is absolutely horrible, but I'm definitely getting better, because when you throw yourself into these circumstances and situations, it's sink or swim, you've got to go for it. So that was part of my favorite thing, was immersing ourselves in French life and allowing ourselves to actually be part of it. My problem was I didn't continue that because work got busy, work got in the way. But it was so much fun, and it really helped me to make that transition. So by doing these different things and forcing myself to go to these different events, you start to understand how the French live their life, why they live it this way. And I think it's like anything, isn't it? If you know why something happens, you can deal with it a lot better. I just could not get my head around the 2-hour lunch breaks and the, you know, our workmen who used to come, they'd arrive at 10, they'd stop at midday, they'd come back at 2, and they'd finish at 4. And you're like, in what world do people work a 4-hour day? But I had to stop thinking like that. Now I'm fine with it. And I think in some cases, it is just a matter of time. The longer you're here, the more you adapt. Something else that used to drive me insane was the fact I couldn't do anything on a Sunday. Now I cherish my Sundays, absolutely cherish them. I love the fact that I don't have to go anywhere other than maybe on a picnic with my husband and the dog. You know, it's wonderful. And do you know what I absolutely cherish about this is when you do go out and you do those picnics, or, you know, you go for a walk and what have you, you see French families spending time together. And it's a big thing here in France. It is all about the quality of life. It's all about family. You know, they really put that above everything else. And that is why they live that slower pace of life. As far as they're concerned, they don't work to enjoy themselves. They work in order to just be able to live. And living to them is about having time, being able to be with the family, enjoy the simple things in life, like a meal together. And that's their why. And when you understand that, you can start to get yourself to a point where you can accept it, you can embrace it, and you can actually start to really love it. So I think that's part of the charm for me about France. And when I first came over, there's a little tiny village down the road from us called Mouton, beautiful little village with the most gorgeous church. And I felt like a French person when I used to cycle through Mouton, and there were these three old ladies, and they'd always be sat together on the same bench, and I would cycle past them with a breezy bonjour, madame. And they'd all wave at me, all smile and all say bonjour back. And it was those simple little pleasures and little things that I would do that really helped me to just get into the French way of life, because it is those simple things. You don't have as much traffic here in rural France. If it says it's going to take you an hour to do a journey, it will take you an hour to do a journey. Like, it's not like in the UK where it says it's going to take you an hour and actually it'll take you 2 because of all the traffic. So there's all these wonderful things that start off winding you up, but actually become the things that you love.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we not only get used to it, but really start to enjoy after a certain amount of time that,
yeah,
you know what? I don't have to go grocery shopping at 11 o'clock at night.
I've never done that here.
I went to school in New York. So in New York, you know, grocery stores were at least at the time, were open 24 hours. So yeah, you could be studying at the library until 1 a.m. and then stop at the grocery store on the way back to the dorm.
Yeah, it's the same in the UK. You can do it there too. So it's definitely an online food shopping. You can't really do that here either. Not where I am anyway.
Yeah, you can here a little bit, but I don't want to. I want to pick up my own food. So.
Me too. I'm good with it.
So tell me a little bit about your online business. So this is a business that you started in the UK and then you registered it in France when you moved over here. So tell me a little bit about what your business does, how you started it, and what was the process like for moving it over here and being able to operate that business from Charente.
So that was a big part of this for us, being able to come over here and know that we could essentially pick up what we were doing in the UK and bring it over here was a big part of it. A lot of people that we know have businesses such as hairdressers, plumbers, they start tea rooms, sheets, etc. We didn't want to do that. So I'm a copywriter. I've always written for a living. And I had a digital course company that I'd had for 14 years, which I've recently just sold, which is very exciting because that frees up a lot of time for me. But essentially now I focus purely on copywriting, and all my different brands all lived under the one business. So because we had other people as directors of the business in the UK, we were able to register ourselves, i.e. my husband and myself, as employees of the company living in France through ESSAF. But this, as you quite rightly said, was before Brexit. Now, that side of it was quite complicated. It wasn't something I wanted to tackle myself. I didn't actually realize that option even existed until we worked with our own expert who was helping us with all this side of things. But it took 2.5 years just to get ourselves registered on the system. And this was with our consultant literally placing phone calls on almost a weekly basis to ESSAF, getting different people every single time. And the system just wasn't recognizing anything that we were putting through, or the paperwork was done. I mean, now it is sorted. It is brilliant. I go onto the system once a month. I put in the wages, which is very, very easy to do once it's all set up. We print off our payslips and we pay our taxes and we're in the system, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, once it's all set up, it's great. But essentially now, all I'm doing is writing for a living. So I work with companies, helping them with the copywriting for their business, but I'm a storyteller. So I love to tell stories. So clients that work with me generally embrace that style of writing and want somebody to tell the story behind their business, whether it's for a sales page, whether it's for their website, whether it's, you know, for a lead magnet that they're putting together, whatever it might be. That's what I tend to spend most of my time doing, which you can do anywhere, which is the beauty of it. So having sold one of my businesses, naturally, I decided to start another one. So I am launching a website called Life in Rural France, where I'm hosting a podcast, writing my book, and finally telling the story behind how we got here, some of the trials and tribulations, the, you know, the smiles, the laughs, the tears, the tantrums, and the downright ridiculous, the things that have happened since we've been over here, because there are so many little things that you could forget quite easily, but they are all things that make living in France just such a big story and so much fun. And you learn all these different things as you go along. So I'm now combining that skill of copywriting with writing a blog all about living in rural France, which is very different from where you live in Paris or on the outskirts of Paris. So we definitely have different lifestyles.
Yeah, for sure. What would you say are some of the lifestyle differences between living in a city in France and living way out in the country?
Well, one of the biggest things, certainly, because I was in Paris earlier this week just to go and see some friends very quickly, 24-hour trip. The minute you go to Paris, pretty much everybody speaks English. So you never have that moment of, okay, so I know what phrase I'm going to use, but what do I say when they answer me? That whole problem that I have here in rural France is definitely there are not many people that speak English. So you have to be prepared, as you should, to learn their language. And it is something that I'm starting to do. How little traffic there is. The people, I can take my dog for a walk and not see a single soul, which, by the way, I love because I'm a huge ABBA fan. And when I walk the dog, can't help myself, I love to sing as I'm walking. And you can literally get lost over there and not see a single soul. And I absolutely love that. So that would definitely be one of the biggest differences, is the peace and quiet. I can go to bed at night and I hear the owls hooting from my bedroom. In fact, I now have to put earplugs in because I'm so used to the quietness and the fact that you can't hear a pin drop. Whereas when I went to Paris, all I could hear was traffic. So there's those sort of differences of pace of life. And I think also things like availability of being able to go out and eat. So here, where we live locally, if you try to go into the pizza restaurant on a Saturday night after 9 o'clock, they will not serve you, even if it's only 10 past nine. So they have their set times at between 7 and 9. That is it. Doesn't matter. They will not budge from that. And mostly things are closed in January, so you won't really be able to do very much. Whereas in Paris, there's a lot more availability. In a bigger city like Bordeaux, there's a lot more availability. You can go into a restaurant past 9 o'clock and know that you'll get served. So there's those little culture differences that you have to look out. There's also things like the fact that you quite regularly see sheep running down the road in front of my property because they've escaped yet again from their pen, often followed by the goat that is running down after them. So there's all these fun little things that you would just never come across in the city that you have here in the rural countryside. And certainly some of them can be a little bit difficult to get used to because it is very quiet. You could go days without seeing anybody if you decided to, you know, just sit at home. So it isn't as easy as just walking out your front door and seeing the Eiffel Tower twinkling at you, I'm afraid. It can be very, very quiet here, but it has its pluses and its minuses. And for me, that's a big plus point now.
Yeah. So
are you ready to begin taking steps towards your own transformation and begin planning your move to France? I'm Allison Grant Luness, and I've been helping people move to France since 2012. I'd love to hear about your big dreams and identify what kind of support you need to make your dream of moving to France a reality. If you want to know how you can begin the transformation process today, request a free 30-minute transformation clarity call at yourtransformation.com/free/call.
What are some of the things that you began to get involved in your local community? How did you start making friends with French people? How did you sort of approach becoming integrated and becoming a part of the town that you live in?
It wasn't easy. Let's put it this way. I think a lot of French people in more rural areas are quite suspicious of English people moving into the villages. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. They worry that you're not going to integrate yourself and that you're not going to try and speak French with them. So therefore, at the very beginning, they're not quite as welcoming. So you just have to throw yourself in there. So the biggest thing for me was line dancing. Now, I know this sounds like a really flaky thing to do, but then again, being from America, I mean, they do have their whole line dancing thing going on, I think probably more in the South, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's a really big thing now. I was just reading an article in one of the French newspapers last week that was saying that there are a lot of associations popping up for like line dancing and country dancing and all kinds of things. And we actually had a client from the US who came and spent a year here who was a swing dance instructor.
Oh, wow. Fun.
And yeah, he actually just went back to the States. He decided he wants to travel everywhere and not just in France. But yeah, it's quite a big scene, which I didn't really know.
It's huge. Like, and it's not embarrassing. We're talking this young people go too. It's not for old fogies. It's literally, I don't know any other way to describe it than say, it's actually a cool thing to do. So
yeah,
I decided to join my local line dancing group. And the best part about it is they do the calling in French. So it's really helped with my French, even though there's often times when I'm going one way and everybody else is going the other way because I've completely got the words wrong or what have you. I have definitely got better. And it's about 70% French people there and 30% English. So it means I still get to meet some English people along the way, but I'm making this effort to be part and parcel of it. And then what happened from there was because I was part of this line dancing community, I suddenly got invited to different events at people's houses. I got invited to a French person's house for my first Bastille Day. And so these types of things threw me into the mix. And then, of course, at a Bastille Day party, you meet other people who will then start talking to you, and then you get invited to other events. But I think really putting yourself forward to be part of the commune is the other thing. So going to the meetings at the Marie and being part of the committee. So I recently, this was quite funny because I really didn't have a clue what I was doing, couldn't understand, because we do have a dialect here as well, which even my French friend from Paris who lives here says even she has problems understanding and thinking, well, what hope do I have then? But you go along and you put yourself into it. And it was a big event. They have a meal once a year at the Marie, which is hosted at the Salda Fair. And I was on cooking and prepping duties with a lot of other French, lovely French ladies who were all a fair bit older than me. But I just got stuck in. And when I got stuck, I pulled out my phone and figured out what it was I wanted to say and went and said it to them in my dreadful French accent. But they were appreciative of the fact that I was there, I was helping, I'm being part of the community. And that, in all honesty, is the best thing you can do. It's scary as hell, but... Yeah. You know what? Once you put yourself in there and you show willing, they will embrace you. They will see you as part of their community and start to make you part of all the other little things that go on. And now I have various different friends that I go and call on for coffee. They're all French. And we have interesting conversations because they don't speak English and my French is still very basic. But I go for it, and I'm more than happy to be corrected with my pronunciation and what have you, but it has made all the difference to feeling like I belong. I could have so easily, I mean, we do live in an area that has a high percentage of English people here, and I know a lot of English people that just stick with English people. They don't even make an effort to integrate themselves into the community. But if I wanted that, I could have stayed in England. Right. I don't want that. The best way to become part of the French community is to become a part of the French community.
Right.
And don't let it hold you back. Just go for it. You know, really, what's the worst that can happen? You screw up with a few phrases. Once you've made that mistake once or twice, you don't make it again. Trust me.
And then you have a funny story to tell in your book, especially
exactly.
if you do something really embarrassing.
Oh, I've done plenty of really embarrassing. I think probably the worst thing I have ever done was, and this was right at the beginning, and we have a really friendly French, obviously she's French, post lady. She's just lovely. The factories. Lovely, lovely lady. And so cheerful. And she always has dog biscuits for all the dogs on her rounds. Like, it is that quintessential countryside post lady. Anyway, I felt quite rude with the fact that all I could say to her was bonjour. I'm thinking, no, come on, make an effort. Anyway, it was a particularly hot day and there was a cadeau waiting for me and she'd hooted her horn. So I went down there and you know what I'm going to say, don't you?
I know where this is going.
Yeah. So I said to her, oh, je suis très chaud aujourd'hui. Now, unbeknownst to me, what I should have said was, j'ai, not je suis, because I just told the French post lady that I was horny. So do not make that mistake. There are not literal translations like that that you can use in France. So that's probably the most embarrassing one. But luckily, she was very understanding. And then my other French neighbor said, well, don't say it, tell her you're cold, because otherwise you're going to be telling her you're frigid. So make up your mind one way or the other. So there you go. That's one of my stories, one of many.
Yeah, we all have those stories. But to come back on the thing about swing dancing is I think that one of the great things about getting into these activities is learning the French. But I think it's also important to remember that no matter how long you've been here and no matter how well you speak French, anytime you do something new, you're going to have to learn the vocabulary.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, it doesn't matter. You know, I've been here for over 13 years and I just started for the first time in France doing ice skating. I joined an ice skating club because I did that. Yes. Yeah. So I've been posting a little bit on Instagram. So I did ice skating as a kid. I did lessons. I've always skated a couple times a year for pleasure, but there's a rink that's not too far from me. So I joined, but there's a thing. I know all the moves and what they are, but I have no idea how to say them in French. So,
okay, that makes me feel better. If somebody with a command of the French language that you have doesn't know everything, then I feel better.
Well, and it's any topic, really. And I mean, you know, my son started doing judo a couple of years ago, and there's that vocabulary that I don't know in English either. So, you know, it's not a flaw to be making mistakes and to have to look things up. And you know, so last week I was at my ice skating thing on Saturday morning and the girl, you know, because it's like 12-year-olds who are teaching us the moves, right? The adult.
Yeah, the 12. Which makes you feel so good.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're 12. I think they're high school age mostly. The advanced competition students who help out with the different groups and teach us some of the more basic skills. And so she, you know, says, oh, have you learned, you know, this thing, she called it a bouté sou. I still don't know exactly what the spelling, I still don't know, but she said, oh, like, have you done the bouté sou? And so she shows us how to do it. And I'm like, oh, it's a forward inside mohawk. Like,
ooh, that's, you're, you know, quite advanced, and I only, if you're doing those.
Well, and the only reason that I knew exactly what it was because I had just watched a video in English the night before that showed that particular thing. And I thought, oh, I think I can learn how to do this. It's one of the next things I'd like to learn how to do. So then I went back and I Googled bouté sou and I tried all different variations of bouté and sou and didn't find anything. So I don't know if she made that up. I don't know if it's a like Quebec thing that they use to not say the English word. I don't really know what that is, but point being that there's always going to be things that like you miss or you're not sure if you understand, but you can't let it stop you from going out and doing the things that you like to do and meeting people.
You just have to, you got to give it a go. And, you know, I think that's something I've been very lucky with. When I grew up, my parents always say, give everything a go. And what is the worst that can happen? If you don't like it or it goes wrong, you stop and you do something else, but give it a go. And so I think that's how I've approached my move to France is give it a go. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And one of my friends said to me, you want to try line dance? And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding. It's something my mum did at the gym when she was about 60. I'm not 60 yet. And then I went along and, oh my God, I loved it. I mean, I'm a musician from many, many years ago. I went to the Royal College of Music, studied violin and piano. And I think one of the things I've always missed with that is not being part of an orchestra anymore and making that sound together, being part of something. And I think that's what I really enjoyed with line dancing was suddenly there we all were, mostly moving in the right direction at the same time. And just producing something that when you look at the videos that she takes, you're like, who's actually doing it? And oh my God, does it ever keep you fit? So if you want to lose a pound or two, go line dancing. Not only will you get thrown in at the deep end with French, you'll have a lot of fun. You won't stop laughing. You'll lose weight. And actually, it's a really good thing to do. And it's really cool. So
that sounds fun.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. I last night I was at a dinner and I was talking to this woman, she and her husband were musicians and they were like, oh, we used to have this women's chorus like before COVID. And I was like,
nice.
Do you have a chorus I can join now? But unfortunately they're much older, they're retirement age and they're kind of done.
But that's exactly the same sort of thing that, you know, anything like that. We've got a theater group near us. And that's another thing that I would potentially put myself in the mix for. There's a local orchestra, which is more like an ensemble than an orchestra, really, but I've been thinking about joining that. But it's a case of just going for it. And like I say, the best place you can start is definitely get in with the local Marie, find out when they're having their meetings, put yourself forward for things, volunteer, show willing. They will embrace you if you do that. You know, it's that simple.
Yeah. And nobody's going to laugh at you and nobody's going to, you know, make fun of your French. And honestly, I think a sign that French people like you and they consider you a friend is that they're going to correct you. Like they're going to, you know, they're not going to be mean about it. They're just going to gently correct you at different points. And, you know, it's not a big deal. It doesn't have to be a big deal, but you know what? It makes your French better. And they're doing that it helps you. And because if they didn't care, they just wouldn't say anything. You know, it's not like you're going to go into the grocery store and somebody's going to be like the caissière is going to be correcting your French. Like, no, it's going to be somebody that you're in a group with and that you're chatting with and whatever. And they'll just, you know, occasionally.
Well, we have something fun that we're doing. So my French friend, Anne, who I referred to earlier, she's from Paris. She's very glamorous. She moved here a year and a half ago and I met her when I was, this is another way you meet people, even though you don't often see people, sometimes you do. I was out walking the dog and I walked past her house and after having seen her a couple of times, we got to the point where we introduced each other. Now we do dinners, we're, you know, part of each other's social circle. It's brilliant. Now, she was married to an Italian diplomat and she speaks, so jealous, French, Italian and English. Her English is probably not the strongest, but since we've been friends, we have this thing now where every other week we meet and we either do cooking at my house where we speak all in English and I show her how to cook an English dish, Or we're at her house where we speak only in French and she shows me how to cook a French dish. So we're going to be sharing all these recipes and fun things that we're doing on our blog. But the point of it is that it forces me for that afternoon when we're at her house cooking her French dish, it forces me to speak French. And the same for her when she comes to my house. And because it's conversational French, I find that far more helpful than sitting down learning grammar, which is not my strong point. I did try to do it, found it really boring, didn't really throw myself into it, so stopped. Whereas with this, I'm having fun. I'm cooking pastries and French food with Anne. It's wonderful. But then if you'd have made me sit down and have that conversation in a lesson format, not going to do it.
Right. Well, and I think that banter or that friendly conversation when you're learning, and even right now, you know, even now sometimes, if you're just trying to maintain the sort of banter that you would have, like even our conversation right now that we're having in English, you know, there's a little bit of back and forth and you pull out some phrases or like make a joke and stuff like that, that's kind of hard to do and maintain the energy of that conversation in French.
Very.
And it gets easier, but you don't have the same way of having a friendly banter with somebody. Like that's something that you have to learn too. And it doesn't come naturally. And you do have to make the effort to like learn to be a casual conversationalist in French the exact same way as that you have to learn how to write a formal letter and sign it like dans l'attente de votre réponse favorable, je vous prie de croire à mes sentiments distingués, or what, you know, whatever the formal phrase is that you're gonna Okay, we're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. Doucement, s'il vous plaît. But yes, it's definitely something that if you can throw yourself into that French conversation, you will learn, you will pick up. And if you've got somebody willing to do it with you who also wants to learn English, like Anne, it's not that she needs to learn it. She's way better than I am. But as far as her English versus my French, she's streets ahead. But she wants to learn those little phrases, those, you know, those little slang things that we refer to. And she does so well with it. But if you can find somebody who will partner with you like that, then it just... it brings it alive. And naturally, there's usually a glass or two of something involved as well towards the end. And well, let's face it, wine makes everything easier, doesn't it? So
I think that French was meant to be spoken while drinking wine.
Couldn't agree more. I'll drink to that one.
It's Friday afternoon, so you can go ahead.
Exactly. But no, it's definitely been an adventure. It's been a roller coaster of emotions. But I think the biggest sign that I have settled is that whenever I leave to go visit my mom or travel anywhere, I can't wait to get home. And that's, I call this home now. So I think that's the biggest sign of any to say that actually I'm in the right place.
Yeah. Wonderful. So what are you looking towards in the next year or 3 years? Tell me about your project.
Okay. Well, obviously, number one is to improve my French. That goes without saying. And it is literally, this next year is all about writing. And it's the thing that makes me happy. So we will be launching Life in Rural France, the podcast, the blog, the book. It's all happening. I'm holding myself accountable for the book. That will be coming out in around about Easter time. But the blog and the podcast are all launching in January. So 2023 is going to be a big year for me. And my focus is to grow it because I enjoy writing so much. I really want to be able to cut back on the amount of corporate work that I do and do more work for myself so that I can embrace my French lifestyle even further. Because as much as I have thrown myself into line dancing and helping at the Salle de Fête and all the rest of it, I still am very much chained to my desk, you know, 9 to 5, and I want that to change. So over the next couple of years, the idea is to very much get the book and the blog and the podcast to a point where they're earning me money. They don't need to earn me lots of money. If anything, it's more for my own sanity to allow me to still have something to do that I really enjoy. But something that doesn't mean I'm chained to my desk Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, so that I can actually start to, if somebody says, ooh, should we go out for lunch this afternoon? I go, oh, hell, why not? Let's do it. Let's go have a plat de jour somewhere. And off I go. So that's very much my next phase of my life is to embrace my French lifestyle, work a little bit less, and really enjoy the writing that I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So just a couple questions about, you know, some of your favorite things. What is your go-to plat du jour if you're going to have a meal in a French restaurant?
Generally speaking, I'm a sucker for moules frites. If there is that on the menu, I am going to have it. But recently, there's this beef cheek plat. Well, I don't know what you would call it. It's beef cheek. I can't see what the French is for it. But it's absolutely delicious. And I never thought I would be somebody that would want to have beef cheek. It's just the word cheek kind of puts me off. But it was absolutely wonderful. So now I purposely look for it on the menu. So I've stopped being that very obvious girl that goes for moules frites and has decided to go for beef cheek, if I could just remember what it was in French, but I can't. So that would definitely be my go-to.
What would you say is your favorite thing about living in France? And is there anything that if you're here for another 20 years, it's still going to annoy you?
Oh, okay. So my favorite thing about living in France is we have this amazing wall that sits just in front of our property and looks out over pretty much the French countryside. And in the winter, you can see a lot further because obviously there's no leaves on the trees. But one of my favorite things is that I can literally go and sit with my back against that wall with a glass of wine, plug my ears in, listen to my music, and just sit and appreciate. And I think that for me just sums up what I love about living in France. And in the summer, you can see some of the fields of sunflowers because obviously we're in the Charente and sunflowers are a product of the Charente specifically. And it takes my breath away. Even now, we've been here 6 years. And even now, that same view, it's my favorite thing to do. And you just would not be able to do that in the UK. You wouldn't have the room or the space or the property to be able to do that. So I think that's probably, yeah, that would be up there as my number one. What still annoys me? Oh, checkbooks. I hate them. They just really annoy me. A, because I actually have to keep looking up the numbers to write my checks. And I just don't like doing them. I ditched checkbooks years ago. So I don't understand why we have to have them. And they are the bane of my life. And they really annoy me. It's totally, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a little idiosyncrasy that I don't like. It's totally irrational. But there you go.
Yeah, I always get confused. I'm like, we've had to pay in checks. I had to pay for skating in checks, and I had to pay for swimming association for my son in checks. And I'm like, can't I just like transfer it? It'll take 4 seconds. And they're like, nope.
It has to be done by check. And it's the same when we have our wood delivery, and the wood delivery guy will come. And what's even more annoying is he never banks the check straight away. It might be 5 weeks and you've forgotten that you had that money set aside for the wood. And then it suddenly comes out and you're like, why have I got no money in my account? But that's, you know, the problems with checks. They can bank them whenever they want to, which is part of my problem with the whole scenario when you're paying 400 euros or whatever it is for your year's worth of wood. So,
right.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's what paying for swimming and paying for some of these activities is like. Yes. Give us 3 checks that we will cash at some random time during the next year. But I never write checks, so you know, I know that these particular 3 checks are out there, and that's probably all the checks
checking.
I'm going to write.
You have to literally, excuse the pun, you have to keep checking in your bank account going,
why they call it a check.
Maybe that is why they call it a check, but that is precisely why they annoy me. And if they are still around in 20 years, they will continue to annoy me. So there you go. Good question.
What are some of your favorite places to visit in France generally and in your region specifically?
In my region specifically, we have this beautiful little village called Vertoy, and it has the most amazing fairy tale chateau that is just stunning. And there's one bar that you can go to that kind of sits on top of the hill overlooking Vertoy, and the chateau is right there. You almost feel like you could put out your hand and touch it. It's that close. And it is just stunning. However, it's full of English people too, which is why we don't want to live there. We just like to visit, but it is very beautiful. And then there's La Rochefoucauld as well, which is another place with another beautiful chateau. And of course, we're living in the Charente, so that is the home to cognac. So another fantastic place to go and visit with all the different brandies and what have you. So we're quite spoilt for choice here. But I recently visited a couple of years ago during lockdown. We decided to go on holiday on the Atlantic coast, and we went to this tiny little place called Lamely, and it was beautiful. So it's kind of in the Medoc region, and it was, yeah, it is in the Medoc region, and it was just beautiful. So Sulac-sur-Mer is the nearest big place, so that would be more the region. But the little place we went to was called Lamely, and we had a little beach hut. You can't really call it more than a beach hut, and it was literally on the beach. And so you had an uninterrupted view of the sun coming up and the sun coming down. So we literally, every night that we were there for, sat there watching this big orange ball of sun disappear into the sea. And it was the most magical thing. And I remember saying to my husband at the time, oh my God, I just feel like I've had the most amazing experience, and it was completely free. Well, other than the fact we had to pay for the beach hut, but apart from that, the actual sun and the sea, and for me, that was just absolutely magical. So I'd say that's probably my favorite place to go in France. Wonderful memories of that.
Oh, lovely. And last question, what is some advice that you would have for somebody who might be thinking about moving to France?
Don't overthink it. Really, don't overthink it. Just go for it. If it feels right, it generally is right. And try and make sure that you immerse yourself as soon as possible into the local community, because it will help you to settle. Otherwise, you're going to spend half your time hankering for home and the other half of the time feeling frustrated. So if you want to call France home, you need to become a part of the French community. So once you're here, just go for it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. People will welcome you if you make the effort. That's what it's all about. But never, ever, ever start a sentence with, I'm sorry, I'm English. Don't do it. Biggest way to lose friends instantly. So that would be my biggest piece of advice. Don't do it. Think of an alternative.
Oh, we get to do. I'm sorry about Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't vote for Trump.
No, but we all have our things, don't we? But no, nothing will offend a French person more than you saying, you know, je suis désolé, you know, and then following that up with je suis anglais. And it's as if to say, I'm English, so I can't be bothered to speak French. It's insulting. Don't do it. You know, make an effort. If anything, just, you know, use a different type of sentence that says something more along the lines of, I'm new to France, I'm learning French, please speak slowly. They will take you into their arms much more if you do that. So that will be my biggest piece of advice.
Yes. Pity is not the way to go in.
Nope. There will be none.
Sorry, Bridget.
They will not give it to you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And I can't wait to hear the first episode of your podcast.
I know. And you're my first guest, which is even better.
I am. So we will share the link to that in the show notes as well. And yeah, anything else you'd like to share?
No, not really, other than come and find me on Instagram, come read the blog, and just say hi to me. I'm very approachable, and I love to hear people's stories about moving to France. And who knows, maybe I could feature you on my podcast as well.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Profiles in France Formation with Alison Grant Luness. If you liked this episode, please like, subscribe, and share on social media. I'll see you next time for a new episode, and in the meantime, I hope we've inspired you today to pursue your dreams, no matter how big or small. Remember, the way you bring your own dreams into reality is by believing in yourself and taking small steps towards your goal. Start today, start now, and à bientôt.